KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, NOAA's annual overview of our nation's fisheries came out on Thursday, and we find out where the most seafood was landed and who got paid the most for last year's catch. Spoiler alert, those top two spots haven't changed in a while. Also, remembering an observer mysteriously lost at sea. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
The National Marine Fisheries Service published its annual report on the state of America's fisheries this week. The 2014 fisheries of the United States details how many pounds, well, really billions of pounds, of seafood was harvested where in the country and how much it was all worth. NOAA's Alaska spokeswoman Julie Spiegel said the landings were down 4% from 2013, and the value is down 1%.
In 2014, U.S. fishermen landed 9.5 billion pounds of fish and shellfish, valued at $5.4 billion. And these figures are similar to those from 2013. Both the value and the volume continue to remain higher than the average for the past 5 years.
And of all that tonnage harvested from the sea, more than half came from Alaska.
60% of all seafood landed from U.S. waters in 2014 came from Alaska fisheries.
And for the 18th straight year, Dutch Harbor reported the largest amount of landings.
762 million pounds, which is up 9 million pounds from last year, or from 2013. And the top three ports in terms of landings were from Alaska. So that's Dutch Harbor, Kodiak, and the Aleutian Islands. Dutch Harbor was the second U.S. port in terms of value of landings, and that's behind New Bedford, Massachusetts.
New Bedford's seafood value, mostly from scallops, reached $329 million. Kodiak's landings were 477 million pounds, worth $143 million. And the Aleutian Islands saw deliveries of 471 million pounds worth $107 million. The state's largest commercial fishing industry group held its three-day fall board meeting at the historic Sons of Norway Hall in Petersburg this week, opening on Tuesday. The United Fishermen of Alaska represent 35 trade associations from Southeast Alaska to Seattle to the Bering Sea. Julianne Curry welcomed the several dozen board members, staff, and guests.
It's really an honor to have you guys here in Petersburg. It's the first time the OFA board has been here since 2001. And from all the rumors, that was a little bit before my time here at UFA. And from the rumors that I've heard, it wasn't a logistical success. There really wasn't anywhere for you guys to eat, and you weren't given the opportunity to gain 5 pounds. So the community really pulled together this time, similar to when the Board of Fish came to Petersburg.
The meeting was focused on the state budget crisis and the commercial fishing industry's role in that discussion. Board President Jerry McCune of Cordova District Fishermen United noted the board would not be deciding on any new taxes for fishing fleets.
Fish and Game is going to present the budget, and we'll look at the budget, and we'll discuss that. But this whole tax and fee thing is just a discussion. We have no obligations to do anything. Not that we can just say we're not supporting any taxes, but it's just a discussion.
McCune said he wanted to come up with some options for the UFA to pursue if the legislature did propose new taxes on the commercial fishing industry. The group was to hear from top officials with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and other state agencies, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, Permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
With the crab season underway out west, some 70 crab boats are bobbing around the Bering Sea. About a dozen of them have a fisheries observer on board. The observers keep tabs on what the boats haul up from the deep. Keith Davis was supposed to be one of those observers, but he went missing last month while working on a boat off the coast of South America. KUCB's John Ryan has more.
Davis has been a fisheries observer for more than 15 years. His employer says he was planning to return to Dutch Harbor this winter to do more observing work, but Davis vanished while working on a transshipment vessel about 500 miles off the coast of Peru. He disappeared one afternoon while a boat was offloading tuna to the Taiwanese ship that he was working on. His ship sailed under the flag of Panama. The Panamanian government, the U.S. Coast Guard, and the FBI are investigating his disappearance. Davis's friends suspect foul play.
Absolutely do, for a number of reasons.
Lynn Goodman is a fisheries observer and a friend of Keith Davis.
I met Keith in our Dutch Harbor bunkhouse while we were both observing on crab boats.
She says Davis was exceptionally safety conscious, and there's no way he would have been on board a ship without a life jacket, let alone just fall off unnoticed. Fisheries observers are a tight-knit community. They're sort of gypsy biologists. They often pursue their work all over the world, wherever governments need somebody to make sure fishing boats aren't hauling up too many of the wrong things. Davis worked several seasons out of Unalaska's Dutch Harbor.
He really loved it there.
Here's Lynn Goodman again.
Alaska's about the best assignment in terms of safety that we get.
Observers spend days or weeks at sea, often alongside crew members who may not welcome the inconvenience or intrusiveness of somebody collecting data on their work. America's top fisheries official this month said she understood the tensions were on the rise between observers and the fishermen they observe. NOAA Fisheries head Eileen Sobeck said threats to observers will not be tolerated. Keith Davis was part of a group trying to establish an international bill of rights for observers to improve their safety on the job. When he was between boat trips out of Dutch Harbor, Davis would play his ukulele at the open mic night at the Grand Aleutian Hotel. He also took his ukulele with him out to sea. This is from a video that Davis shot of himself in 2012. He's in shorts, alone on the deck of a big transshipment boat somewhere warm.
This song, originally wrote it out at sea here on a transshipment vessel.
He tells the camera he wrote the song in honor of several observers who died at sea.
Must have been his time to go. Something we're not meant to know. He's left us his legacy. Allowing us all to be free.
I asked Lynn Goodman if Davis's friends still have hope that he's alive somehow.
I think it's highly unlikely that he's still out there somewhere. I think if he were, we'd have heard from him by now. I have to say this, though. If anybody could still be alive, it would be Keith. He was very, very, very resourceful.
Some say he's lost. Maybe he's been found.
Now his family and friends are in a kind of limbo. They can't be sure whether to keep up hope that he's alive, or else to accept that the song he wrote for other observers now applies to him as well. In Unalaska, I'm John Ryan.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
As a fishing town, Petersburg for years has relied on one crane dock for loading heavy equipment on and off boats. Earlier this year, the community opened the new $9 million drive-down dock. Now, with money left over from the project, the borough plans to build a third loading dock. Angela Denning tells us more.
Papers, diagrams, and maps covered three tables that were pushed together in the borough's assembly chambers. A dozen people sat around the outside. harbor board members, assembly members, the harbor master, one of the town's heavy equipment haulers, and the engineer.
I've got a set of plans here. They're developed to 50%, and I'll send these both ways. And I've got
about Dick Somerville is with PND Engineers out of Juneau. He was presenting the 50% design plan of the bulkhead loading dock. It would be another loading area for boaters, built onto the parking area of the new drive-down dock.
There's a number of questions I have. I'm just detailing on some of this stuff, okay?
The borough has $1.26 million left over from a state grant for the drive-down dock project, funds that will expire at the end of June 2017. The Harbor Board considered two main options for spending the money: a pile-supported loading dock at $3.1 million, and a sheet pile bulkhead estimated at $1.7 million. The board decided to go with the bulkhead because it was cheaper and more stable. It would essentially be an extended area of the parking lot of the drive-down dock. It would be made with fill material held together by sheet pile that would allow boats to pull right up to it. But the engineer's estimate of $1.7 million was still too steep, and at the meeting, the Harbor Board hashed out details looking for ways to save money.
Is there going to be any room to move in and then out without this cost prohibitive dredging 40 feet of fill?
And these are galvanized sheet piles, by the way. That's what I have in the budget right now. You could pull that off and save $75,000 to $80,000, but I've always imagined this as a galvanized sheet pile wall.
Mm-hmm. Do you need that energy absorber?
Or does it have to look like that? It could be a solid piece of material, 3 inches.
We can do all those things. We could extend this and put another weldment in here and put the bull rail out here, I suppose. We can do all of that. We can do that.
The Harbor Board offered up some design tweaks and decided to hold off on dredging the area right now, at the same time focusing on functionality and how the dock will be used.
Because right now, what we do here for the city is everything's off the back. You can't see a single thing, and it makes it tough. It's a little bit of a safety issue.
Charles Davis is the owner of Tonka Toy Rentals. He moves a lot of equipment on and off boats for fishermen, like bait sheds, skiffs, crab pots, and other heavy gear. He talked with board members and Harbor Master Glorianne Wallen about the size of the dock and how close he could get his boom truck to the boats.
Picking off the side, and man, any time we can get that boat 1 foot, 2 foot in closer, it makes a big difference.
PND's Dick Somerville took notes. He said he is planning on having the 90% design plan of the project available by the end of November.
I think that's the direction I need from you guys, is how low you want this to get, because I'm running out of things to cut out of this.
The Harbor Board is trying to keep the project within the range of what they already have, $1.26 million. Harbor Master Glorianne Wallen called the board meeting a good start to the project and said they would follow up with internal discussions over the next month. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's version of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KFSK's Joe Bicknicki and Angela Denning in Petersburg, and KUCB's John Ryan in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.